I'm Christine Dean, and this is Live from Studio A. And we are very happy to welcome back to our studios someone who's, I think you've probably been here since I've been here more than anybody else, Charlie. You take the prize.
Well, I'm glad to be back again. Thank you for continuing to invite me back in spite of myself.
Well, I'm glad you come back in spite of ourselves. So you put out your new album, Dog, back in September, and mm-hmm. so we'll be talking a bit about that. And this month you've been doing a residency at the Cedar Lounge in Superior, and that is again happening tonight, 8 o'clock, right?
8 o'clock tonight, 8 to 11.
And yeah. Anybody playing with you again? Sometimes you have people play with you?
Brother Dave. Dave Hundreiser is an amazing harmonica player, and he's going to be sitting in with me tonight.
Okay. And then tomorrow night you are playing at Blush with the Devil's Flying Machine at 9 o'clock, your other project.
That's right.
All right. So if you want to see Charlie, and then it sounds like you've got we'll talk about this, but you got a busy 2018. So see him locally while you can. What do you want to get started with, Charlie?
Oh, I don't know. I'd play something off the new record, I guess. This is called Boiling Down Silas.
Young Silas traveled with his family to another town, and his dad found work at the grocery store. His mom cleaned house with the lady next door. And then rolled Silas in a new grade school, and there they were while Silas grew. And there they were while Silas grew. Silas grew into a rowdy boy on his bike all over town. Now he would ride, and most of the time he was all alone. His only friend lived on the other side of town, but they'd get together every Saturday to see what kind of hell they could raise. To see what kind of hell they could raise. July, Silas held his mother's hand. Well, she cried, his dad had been called back to the Golden Shore. She said, Silas, he can't come home no more. She said, Silas, he can't come home no more. Now you know Silas, he was an only child, and he never ever left his mother's side. And he lived in the room of a rowdy boy, even though he's 45. Things look the same as they did when he was 12, and there he was till the time ran out. And there they were till her time ran out. In the winter, in the freezing cold, he couldn't bury his mom because the ground was too hard. So Silas, he went home and he laid on his bed, and his feet hung out way over the end. He could feel his mother's hand in his, and his dad's voice drifted into his ear. And his dad's voice drifted into his ear. Be an orphan now when he's not a child. His clock is running down. Who's he gonna blame when there's nowhere to turn? And his head it ached and his stomach burned. And he tossed and he turned and he could never rest. There he was till the very end. And there he was till the very end.
That is Charlie Parr, live from Studio A, and a tune from his new album, Dog. Another character, you have some great characters in your songs. And where did Silas come from? Where did the idea for Silas come from?
You know, most of this record is got more to do with me than any other record that I've ever written. Silas is more probably me than anybody I can think of. I mean, every song I think that I've written has a bit, you know, it's just the nature of art. You know, you put something of yourself in your art no matter what you do. This last record has more of me in it than ever, but it's still a conglomeration of kind of, you know, I meet a lot of folks, and it's always been an important part of my life that I do that. And you take in things and a lot of things. You just take in and take in and take in, and that gets mixed in with your own thing. Then when these songs start coming out, you know, they're always like a conglomeration of all this other stuff. Lately, they've been more like I've ended up with more of me in that mixing bowl than ever. So Silas is a lot of me.
And that that wasn't necessarily something that you chose. It sounds like it kind of chose you, because you were going through some tough times, and you've talked about that a little bit with this album and kind of the depression that you suffered with more when you were younger, and then it's come back, it sounds like.
Yeah, it was bad when I was a kid, but, you know, when I was a teenager and I was, you know, had, you know, an intense amount of depression and, you know, along with suicide attempts and these kinds of things, you know, when you're 14, 15, 16, it's horrifying and terrible. The one thing that people will say to you is, you know, things are going to get better. You know, you're a teenager. When you're 50 and you're going through the same kind of thing, there's this extra added sense of, like, hopelessness, because no one is coming up to say, you know, oh, you have a lot of life ahead of you, you know. Even though I might, but, you know, that's gone now. And and so there's a when depression kind of came back in the past 2 to 3 years, it was accompanied with this really kind of bleak sense of hopelessness that I didn't feel before.
Did it creep up on you, or did you recognize it at first?
No, I didn't recognize it.
Because if you haven't been in that space for a while, I can imagine, like, something might be off and you don't know.
Depression is weird for me anyway, and I don't know. It's not sadness. I mean, I feel a lot of sadness in my life, but it's not sadness. It's more physical than it is. Than I think. I'm surprised myself at how physical it can be. You know, you can develop these kind of irritabilities, you know, you can get, you know, dizzy spells, you get fatigue, you know, there's a lot of extra physical stuff that happens. When it first happened, I wondered if I was sick in some other way until I, you know, went and started getting some help and realized what was happening. But it kind of, it was surprising, because I thought I was done with it.
Right.
I grew out of asthma, you know.
Right.
I thought I'd grown out of depression as
right,
well.
Right, right. Does the fact that that it did go away for a while, does that give you any, you know, does that help you to see any optimism for, okay, it went away before, perhaps? You know, you're saying it's different when you're in your 50s, but.
Yeah. I don't mean to be completely, like, dire about it, because I do feel optimistic. I'm getting help,
which is amazing, and a lot of people don't, and so it just the fact that you're doing that is amazing.
I said something about it, and I don't know if I would have gotten help as readily if I hadn't mentioned it, because I didn't feel like I should mention it. You know, the record was done, and you know, people close to me was like, ew, you know, what's this all about? And I had to start telling some people close to me, and I hadn't done that, you know. I hadn't felt comfortable talking about it. It was still something that I'm identifying with it as a thing that happened to me when I was a teenager.
Right.
And so when I'm 50, it's I hate to say embarrassing, but it's in a way it's kind of embarrassing to say I have this thing that I had when I was 14 or 15 and it's back. And
mm-hmm.
So saying something about it helped spur me to get some help for it.
Well, and I imagine it opened up a lot of conversations with people and maybe with people that have gone through something similar. Yeah. And are perhaps your age and going through something similar.
A lot of folks, mm-hmm. Really kind folks have come and talked to me and offered me help and just companionship and fellowship, you know, in this. And that's been amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I frankly, you know, that the, you know, there's an element of guilt that goes along with this because I am in a unique and very privileged position, you know, in a lot of ways. And I don't have a job. I haven't had a job in 17 years. You know, all I do is just kind of bum around and play the guitar, you know. And it's sometimes hard, I think, for some folks to think, oh, well, that's nothing to be sad about there, you know, and it's hard to kind of get to that point where you can tell people this hasn't got to do with sadness, you know.
Well, I think you made the point in an interview, in probably the City Pages interview, which is where a lot of people found out about what was going on, that it's easier to tell somebody you have the flu, that it really is kind of the same thing. You know, this is a disease. This is a legitimate, you know, it's not something that, it's not just sadness. It's not, you know, it's something that you're struggling with.
Right.
And so it's just as legitimate as any kind of, you know, the flu or cancer or something like that.
Right.
But it's hard sometimes for people to maybe see it that way.
Absolutely. And I understand mm-hmm. that. It's
yeah.
something that, you know, our society hasn't really, like, legitimized. I don't know if that's the right word. You know, there's no parity in insurance, for example. You know, there's no equality in insurance between having a more obviously physical disease and having a mental health issue.
Right, know? Right. And I know, so. For example, that, you know, emergency rooms are struggling because they get so many people with mental illness that aren't being helped and aren't being treated, right. And we don't take it seriously enough.
Exactly.
Well, so it took you a while to make the album because you were kind of like, this is really... if I do this by myself, it's kind of depressing.
I was going to do it alone. I wanted to make a solo record, mm-hmm. and I started working on the songs, and these particular songs just weren't cooperating with the solo, kind of, they were all getting really heavy, and then, you know, a couple more kind of ideas, and I have a lot of ideas, you know, I have many, many ideas, but they're usually bad ones, and I don't recognize how bad they are until after I've started implementing. Because what I do is I have an idea, and then I immediately, like, grab the phone, and I start calling, I've got this idea, you know, it's like 4 a.m. or whatever, you know, I'm going to do this, this is going to be great, you know, I'm going to, you know, put sails on my van or whatever it is, I had some dumb idea, and the next day, of course, I realize this is the dumbest idea. This week, this wins the weekly dumb idea prize. So I got to call everybody back and say, nah, that was a dumb idea. I'm sorry I bothered you about that. And they're like, yeah, I know. It's, you know, it's normal for you to do this. You know, you're always the last one to know how normal it is for you to do dumb things. I am anyway. So I went through a couple of those phases where I call people up and like, we're going to get like 100 people and have a band, you know, and it's going to be great. And then at the end of the day, I just did what I always do, which works. You know, I had a few friends that we've played together a lot, and we went to his to Tom Herber's, and he found us a place to set up, and we sat down and played the record.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they hadn't heard it before, but that's the way the last 3 records have gone. You know, I play them the songs, and they hear the songs, and we start the tape machine, and they play along with the songs, and then it's over.
And that kind of changed the experience of it for you, it sounds like.
It lightened it up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It brought the songs kind of out of that, you know, sad place that they were in. And I thought it helped them to, you know, and they need to be, you know, they need to be not lively, but I think it's easier to listen to heavy music when, you know, there's not that kind of melodrama surrounding it that I think those songs had when I first wrote them, you know.
And there, you know, the album is called Dog, and there's a couple of dog songs on there. You know what? We'll talk about dogs in just a little bit, but let's hear another tune. What do you want to play next, John?
This is called Hobo. Well, it's going to be if this string cooperates. There's too many strings on this guitar.
I'm dead. It's a book I always start, but I'd never read. I was born to follow in the steps my dad tread. If I'd have known that then, I'd have fled. Ain't somebody gonna tell me what I'm doing here? Ain't somebody gonna tell me where I'm going? Ain't somebody gonna spend a blank minute on me? Won't you pray for an old homo who's gone wrong? Every day I wake up is a new day. Every song I sing contains a new refrain. When I meet you again, we'll have changed. I'll remember your face, but maybe not your name. Somebody gonna tell me what I'm doing here? Ain't somebody gonna tell me where I'm going? Ain't somebody gonna spend a blank minute on me? Pray for an old hobo who's gone wrong. Somebody gonna tell me where I'm going? Ain't somebody gonna spend a blank minute on me? Won't you pray for an old homo who's gone wrong? Tell me what I'm doing here. Ain't somebody gonna tell me where I'm going? Ain't somebody gonna spend a blank minute on me? Pray for an old hobo who's gone wrong.
Charlie Parr live from Studio A, and that's the tune that opens his new album, Dog. So, as I mentioned, a couple of dog songs on there. I'm actually very fond of the title track.
Thank you.
From a dog's perspective. And are you in that one, too?
I'm sure. Yeah.
I just really get a kick out of that one. And And you, of course, you write a lot about your dog Reuben, that who takes you for walks.
Yes,
more like it.
We learned about that a few years ago. That works a lot better than me trying to tell her what to do.
Mm-hmm. And she's taking you to some really places that you might not have gone otherwise if you hadn't kind of followed behind her.
Yeah, we do a lot of trespassing nowadays.
Do you ever get busted?
No, I got scowled at one day, but we were just passing through. You know, I got a pocket full of little bags, you know, and then I don't leave behind anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. You're good. You're a good citizen. You and Reuben are good citizens. But have you had other dogs in your life, and have they played a big role like Reuben does?
Always, yeah. Mm-hmm. My mom and dad loved dogs, mm-hmm. and there was always a dog. You know, they'd get old and pass on, or they'd get hit by the milk truck, or you know, something. But there was another one, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I loved them all. It was always a good thing to have a dog around, and I don't know life without one. But yeah, it's been an important part of my life.
Mm-hmm. And there's a video in the works, I think.
There's a video that is done. I don't know when it's going to be unveiled. I don't know much about videos. There's been two videos. There's been one for another song on the record that was a cartoon that I really enjoyed.
That is really fun.
Yeah, I didn't have anything to do with that one either. I met the guy after the fact. I met Jake after the cartoon was done, and I don't know how he did it, but he managed to like capture my essence really well in the cartoon,
which is.
And my daughter even said, "That's exactly you. It looks like you. He acts like you. Walks around whistling like that. You know, breaks strings."
And what's the name of that song again? I'm blanking.
Called "Peaceful Valley."
Peaceful Valley, and it's the video is really great. It's on Charlie's website, charliepar.com. There's an animated Charlie in it, but the guy has some issues. He has a few issues. You know, he likes to not throw anything away, and
he's an introvert.
Yep. Yeah. Extreme introvert with. An extra helping of stuff that he can't part with. And the neighbors are all mad at him, and everybody's mad at him. Yep. And you have to watch it. It's at charliepar.com.
The new video was directed and created by Dan Hooting from Minneapolis. And he's done videos for Trampled by Turtles and Low, a lot of beautiful images. He's really, really good. And so I talked to him for a while, told him what the song was about, and he came up with this kind of plot, I guess. I'm even in this video.
Oh, okay.
I have about a half a second cameo. I had more than that, but I think they cut it because, you know, it's okay, that's probably enough, Par. You can go home, we'll finish your video without you.
Did Reuben make the cut?
Reuben did not make the cut.
Oh, okay.
Reuben was not feeling so good, and it was kind of cold, so
mm-hmm.
she's getting kind of, you know, old now, and I'm a little more fearful about having her mm-hmm. in the cold and stuff. So,
well, and but there was like a casting call for everybody to come and bring their dogs. So
we had a lot of dogs.
Well, Duluthians love their dogs.
It was an amazing morning. We had it was cold, but it was really a lot of folks showed up with their dogs,
mm-hmm.
and it was nice. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, looking forward to seeing the results of that, and I'm going to guess that's going to be available at charliepar.com, too. Yeah. So who decides that you're going to do a video for a particular song?
I guess I can if I want to.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't really thought about it. I mean, you know, we work with a record label now, and they like to have stuff like that, and they suggest stuff, and I'm usually okay with stuff. I'm more comfortable just playing the guitar.
Right.
And kind of being left to my own devices. I understand that things have to get promoted and stuff. And in order for me to keep on doing this and not having to get a job, you know, mm-hmm. certain things have to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody in my life so far has been really kind about saying, we'd like to do this to promote your music. And what do you think? And are you comfortable with that? You know, and then I have the option of getting to say yes or no and getting to be involved. Or, you know, if my skill level isn't in that place, you know, like with videos, I'm not, that's not where my talent is, and I'm grateful that there are people that have that skill, you know, like the artwork for the record, you know, meeting people that can create artwork like that or take photographs, you know, is an important part of my life because I have the skills that I feel comfortable doing, and then have people around me that have, you know, skills that they have, and we worked together to create something cool. So,
well, and I actually was going to ask you about that because I've noticed that you always find like really wonderful artists to do the work on, you know, your covers. The latest one, tell me about the artist who did that one, because it's a picture of a dog, yeah, painting, and it's beautiful.
Jennifer White. She goes by Jay White. She's a painter and now getting into more sculpture from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Her gallery is called Post Pilgrim Gallery. There's a website, I think, postpilgrim.something.com, maybe. Mm-hmm. But she's amazing, and her work's incredible and huge and deep and really powerful. And I first saw her, I was at a studio in studio in Sioux Falls for the White Wall Sessions, and their studio is adjacent to her gallery. So I walked through there, like, wow, this is amazing. And we got to be friends, and I asked her if she could put something together for the cover, which is amazing on the cover of the record. It's even more incredible when you see it in person.
Oh, I bet.
But, you know, a lot. I've been lucky. I've been able to collaborate in that way with a lot of artists.
Yeah, I love the Barn Swallow cover, and Shauna Gilmore did a wonderful depiction of you, which I heard a rumor that you were not crazy about having it be you, but she did such a beautiful.
I'm not a fan of my face.
But you know that her painting is so, and you look so benevolent and so, just, you know, I love that picture.
I'm a huge fan of Shauna's work, mm-hmm, and what she did with the subject matter at hand, I thought was fantastic.
And it's for those of you who haven't seen, and this was the vinyl, and it was a Record Store Day release,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
And what's it called again?
It's called Ain't Dead Yet.
Yeah, Ain't Dead Yet, which the song is actually on this album, but that this was like the Record Store Day release of that. And it's just Charlie's face, and he's in the woods, and his beard has these tendrils coming out, and there are little animals in the tendrils of his beard, and it's all green and lush and beautiful. And so if you haven't seen that, I highly recommend you take it.
When my beard gets long, that's pretty much real. There's a lot of animals and wildlife.
You find birds in there. That's very whimsical, very whimsical. So you were telling me off there that you have, and you've been doing a bit of touring behind the album so far. And you got more. It sounds like you got more on tap.
I'm leaving in a week for, mm-hmm, for 6 weeks of Europe and England.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I come back, I've got a little time and then leave for the Southwest and festivals and stuff. I mean, the year is kind of sketched out at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of festivals and, you know, both coasts and the South and. So it should be a good year.
Mm-hmm. And I also mentioned this off the air, and I'm just curious if my perception is correct. I kind of feel like, you know, it feels like, you know, you've been more people know about you year by year. You know, you've been around for a while, but you still seem to like be gaining audience. And you said that you actually have gotten a manager. So if I'm seeing you, if I feel like I'm seeing you more places, it might be because of that. Is that?
Most likely because, mm-hmm, of that. I'm possibly the worst self-promoter.
You do okay.
I'm all right. But anyway, mm-hmm, I'm not. This goes back to that kind of where your skills are. And my skills are not in, like, promotion and business and reading contracts and stuff like that. I'm really not very good at that. But I've been doing this for long enough now that, you know, there are contracts and there are, you know, there's music out there that you know, in the internet that I don't have any clue what it's doing or who's doing what with what. And, you know, between, you know, kind of my own personal stuff that I need to deal with on a daily basis and wanting to just play the guitar, I don't want to deal with it. And I have a really good relationship with my manager, Mark Gehring, and he's an amazing guy and has helped me a ton. Through the years, actually, and I've known him for a very long time. And so he's been super helpful at relieving a lot of the pressure of, like, I have a contract, I don't know what it even says, and, you know, knowing me, I won't bother reading it or signing it, and, you know, things just kind of go by the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been nicer to have him. And, yeah, it's been, you know, it's been a big deal for me. Just in general, you know, shows. And last night I opened for Tedeschi Trucks Band.
Oh, my goodness.
Got to hang out with Derek Trucks, and That was amazing.
Wow. You
know, I would not have pursued that option or probably even noticed that I got that email because I check my emails once every couple of weeks. You know?
Wow. Now, have they heard of you?
Yes, I don't know. Okay. They were super nice. Everybody was really kind. The coffee was great in the back. And
nice.
Big, giant venue, and I felt like I played kind of all the notes I felt like I needed to play during those songs and hung out for a while. It was really nice.
Okay. I want to ask you, because you mentioned I Ain't Dead Yet, and you had mentioned Doc Boggs in a couple of interviews, and that particular tune was inspired by him.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to talk about, I know there's tons of people that you have been inspired by, and so let's just talk about this particular one. Tell me about Doc and how he's inspired you. And
Doc Boggs, I first heard Doc Boggs' music when I was a kid. My dad had a couple of volumes of the Harry Smith anthology, the reissue version of it. The library had the rest of them, but Dad had like two records, no covers, just the records. One record from the Social Music volume, and both records from the Songs volume. The first volume was called Ballads, and Doc Boggs is on the Songs volume. I think it's Country Blues. It's on there, and I was, you know, everybody who listens to Doc Boggs says kind of the same thing. It's ethereal, you know. There's something like otherworldly about his whole thing, his singing and playing, that you can't quite put a finger on. But I wanted to hear it again and again and again, and I became really kind of obsessed with Doc Boggs and wanted to get a banjo, and you know what Doc Boggs did. You know, he's a coal miner from Norton, Virginia, playing the banjo, but he was playing blues guitar on a banjo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wasn't a traditional banjo player, and it sounded different than anything else before, since, really. I mean, you know, and then he kind of disappeared. His wife told him that she was afraid he was going to spend eternity roasting in hell for playing this kind of music, blues, you know. And in the 60s, Mike Seeger, thankfully, went and found him in Norton, Virginia. And he had worked in the coal mines ever since the late 20s when he had made his records.
Mm-hmm.
And convinced him to record again. And he brought his banjo out and recorded songs in the 60s that were even more amazing to me than the songs he recorded in the late 20s, because they had the weight of how many decades of him working in the coal mines and not playing music, you know. Suddenly there was this extra weight. You know, country blues, for example, had acquired some new verses, and I've never gotten sick of listening to Doc Boggs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And, well, and in one of the interviews, I was reading an interview where they were asking you about banjo, and you were talking about that, using it in a different way, and that people don't often, like, you know, do different tunings, and that you can get different sounds from it. And do you play much banjo anymore? I know you used to play it a lot more.
Yeah. Well, Doc Boggs, you know, if you buy especially the 60s records, they'll list the tunings after the song.
Oh, wow.
Because Boggs retuned for almost every song.
Mm-hmm.
And he would, you know, in an interview at one point, he said that the song kind of grows out of these different tunings. And you can really hear it when you retune the banjo. If you follow the liner notes and you retune the banjo, you find yourself in that world. You're like, ooh, I can hear this. I can already hear this song, like, seeping its way out of this instrument. I sold my banjo. I do not have a banjo anymore.
Okay.
I have a brain disorder called focal dystonia that makes it really, really difficult for me to play the banjo. It's kind of a, long story short, it's kind of a trigger finger kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be able to play kind of a quasi clawhammer style banjo that now hurts so hard to play it. I can't even play it anymore, and it's frustrating and makes me kind of feel sad. So I just thought I'd take a break from the banjo, and maybe someday I'll pick it up again.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't even have one right now. And I love it. I listen to a lot of banjo music, and I miss playing it.
Mm-hmm. But you got other instruments in your arsenal. You got the 12-string today, and of course
I play mostly 12-string these days as my first passion, and I play a resonator guitar, steel-bodied resonator guitar a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's all you need.
I have a trombone from when I was a kid, but I cannot play.
But you still have it.
I got one, man. I just bent it up, and I can bleed out, you know, a little bit of this and a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was in third grade, I was the only one with arms long enough to reach that low note. So I had to play a trombone.
Do your kids play music at all? I know you have.
Yeah, my kids play piano, and my son actually plays a little trombone.
I was going to say, they pick it up, it's lying around the house, and mess around with it.
And my my daughter has been taking vocal lessons. She's got a really beautiful voice, and she and her mother like to sing. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's lovely. Yeah. That's lovely. Well, so it sounds like you've got a busy year, like we said. And how does that work? You know, you got to take care of yourself. And, you know, you were saying earlier that sometimes people, you think, you know, oh, I don't even have a job. Who am I to have this problem or whatever? But you do have a job that actually kind of involves a lot of alone time. And is that difficult? Does that make it hard sometimes? And how do you balance that when you're trying to take care of your health and your mental health?
Right. Well, yeah, it's hard. I mean, I am an introvert, really, in real life. And so it's almost too easy sometimes to have, like, 8-hour car rides because I'm like, ooh, you know, the whole day. Turn off the phone.
I don't have to deal with it. I can relate to that. I'm an introvert as well. So.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's been, especially in the last few years, there's been a lot of stuff that I've had to do to readjust my health and my, you know, fixing up my diet a little bit. You know, not drinking and trying to stay away from stuff like that has been important. You know, and you know, finding those people around the country of the places that I go that I have really meaningful relationships with and maintaining those relationships has been a really important part of, you know, keeping at it.
And that's a really wonderful aspect of your job. You've gotten to meet so many people and become friends with so many people around.
Absolutely.
Everywhere.
And it's really easy when you're living with depression, it's super easy to let go of relationships because the first thing you want to do is not to talk to anybody and just shut the door and go away. And I've recognized that that's a really bad decision, even though that's a thing that I really desire to do. It would be pretty unhealthy.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I'm glad that you have. It sounds like you have a lot of support and you have a lot of awareness. And, you know, when I first was reading that article, I just was thinking if the care and esteem of a community, you know, could cure something like that, you'd be just fine because, you know, there was so much care and concern for you at that moment. But I know it's not that easy, but just know that it's
lucky,
there.
In this town, you know, and Twin Ports in general, people have been so kind, and I'm very grateful for that.
All right, well, let's hear one more tune. What do you want to wrap up with, Charlie?
I want to play a song that I did not write. How do you like that? This is a Leadbelly recorded this a long time ago. Standing in the kitchen with your morning on. Standing in the kitchen with your morning on. Standing in the kitchen with your morning on.
but hey, 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 hey. Looking right at her when the sun went down. I was looking right at her when the sun went down. I was looking right at her when the sun went down. Hey, 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 hey.
Charlie Parr, live from Studio A. Thanks so much, Charlie. Always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me, Christine. I appreciate it.
And again, Charlie is wrapping up his Wednesday residency at the Cedar Lounge in Superior. Although there's another Wednesday in January, so maybe you should just show up
I'm not doing anything that night. I'll ask him and find out. But whoever's playing next Wednesday, if it's me or if it's anybody else, it's probably worth it to go down and hang out. It's a nice place.
Might be. So he's going to be there tonight at 8 o'clock, and you've been known to start a few minutes early if you're ready to go. So
if I'm sitting around, I don't want to. Easily bored, you know, I'd rather play.
Might as well. And then you're also playing tomorrow night at Blush with Devil's Flying Machine at 9 o'clock. And doing many Devil's Flying Machine shows lately or just
not really when
you can?
It's always nice to do that because I'm really interested in expanding my horizons a little bit, but it's been hard to make time for it, I
mm-hmm.
guess.
So one of their rare shows tomorrow night, 9 o'clock. Thanks so much, Charlie.
Thank you.
Today's Live from Studio A session was produced by me, Christine Dean, with help from Andrew Ressler and Emma Gilhausen, with funding provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. To check out upcoming guests or to listen to previous sessions, go to KUMD.org and click on Live from Studio A under Programs. This is Live from Studio A on 103.3 KUMD. Thanks for listening.